Welcome to Journey from Jacob. From our first breath to our last heartbeat, we are all on a journey. Jacob was a biblical character whose journey is documented for our benefit. Like all of us, there were unforgettable moments along the way, which required decisiveness. One of those decisions determined his destination. We will not only discuss Jacob's journey, but Israel's as well, right up to date. May this podcast inspire you to make choices along your way that will benefit others and guide you to the destination we all long for.
Welcome back to Journey from Jacob. Bavakasha means welcome. Chavarim, friends, v'mishpacha and family. The more we get to know each other, the more we will be like Jesus. That's kind of like he has described us as family. And the more we look like him, the more we start to act and think like each other, and we become true brothers. This is what he's looking for, a community of brothers and sisters who are willing to follow after him, regardless of the price, regardless of the disappointments that show up. I think a lot of the Old Testament has to be explored more, and this is just a general sense. Some of you are students, no doubt. But there's a distinction, I think, that's very interesting, and I think it helps to simulate the story, because the Old Testament is filled with stories. There's a lot of, not so much teaching, but instruction. The New Testament, on the other side, is a lot of activity and teaching. So there's an academic side to both of them. But there's some real peculiarities about the Old Testament that we're going to be bringing out because it's less known. And that is that, and I'm sorry to say this, it's really not been taught this way in many circles. And matter of fact, one of the things that I've heard is that there's no mention of God the Father in the Old Testament. Now, that's not true, number one. But the other thing is that there's a fatherly aspect that runs through the theme of the Old Testament. And it's got some good aspects and some bad aspects because a lot of times it was with bad fathers. But the good fathers show up. There's a longing for a good father. In fact, the New Testament brings that out at a certain point. It says, you have many teachers, but few fathers. So I believe discipleship is raising up, in the men's side, is raising up men who are willing to be fathers. And that means getting involved. And it's not easy because we don't relate commonly at the deeper emotional levels. That's not what I'm getting to. I'm getting to the fact that fathers are able to pick up their sons when it's necessary and hold them in their arms, the strong arms, and make sure that they know that they're secure and safe and that they can go on with their journey. I think riding a bicycle is one of the greatest illustrations. Now, I know women, mothers, oftentimes these days, are raising the children alone. So they have to be both male and female, mother and father. But like the illustration of a father taking the child on a bicycle for the first time down the street and, you know, just holding the wheels so it doesn't wobble, the handlebars, and letting go at times and just the joy, the exhilaration you see in the face of the child when they can actually balance themselves. And the same thing goes for the father, the jubilation in his face knowing that his son is moving up in the world in a sense and can handle things that were just very recently very difficult and seemingly impossible. And this is what God does with us. This is why this journey is a path of righteousness, because, and it's guided by him. We spoke about that from Psalm 23. Megale, it's a tough road, but he must guide us. And when he does, he will keep us from not always falling, but he will keep us from stumbling, you know, along this path over and over again. So he guides us and protects us from not just the dangers, but the actual path itself has its own dangers without people being involved. So it's a relationship issue. And what we're going to be getting to here, I think it's summed up in one verse. And this is from Exodus 3:15. Now remember, we are at this point where Jacob had left Laban, his father-in-law, who is a mean man, a wicked man. I mean, he's called that. And he's a conniver. Makes Jacob look like an upright man in his dealings. But Jacob, we know too from his past, he was a conniver as well. And a deceiver. Jacob actually literally means deceiver. And it's interesting also in Jeremiah, I think it's 17, says that the heart of man is wicked above all things. It also can mean the heart of man is wicked, is deceiving above all things. And it's using that same word for Jacob. So this all changes. This makes an abrupt change, which it's not that noticeable initially. And there's this subtle aspect to it, but it is an abrupt change because we see in the physical that Jacob, when he's wrestling with God, and it is God he's wrestling with, and God starts the match, by the way, that he won't stop. He just won't stop. And finally, God touches him in the thigh, in the hip, I mean, and he stops. He can't go anymore. And he's asks the wrestler, God, what is your name? And he says, why do you ask me my name? He says, but your name is going to be changed now from Jacob. You'll no longer be called Jacob to Israel. That's going to, should ask some question marks to you as you even begin to digest that, because throughout the Bible, we still hear this thing about Jacob. You know, we still hear the name Jacob over and over again, the God of Jacob, or just references to Jacob, but as if he's still alive. So that requires a conversation too, which we're going to try to get to. But the verse that I want to start off with is this one in Exodus chapter 3:15. This is when God appears to Moses, and Moses doesn't know who he is. And God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. This is God speaking. He wants to be remembered by the name of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, Abraham was a father to Isaac. Isaac was a father to Jacob. But he doesn't say, I'm to be remembered forever by the name of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Now, this is something we're going to get to as we go on. But there's a reason for that. And if you recall, if you've been following, in shortly after we started, I talked about this mountain that was between me and the leader of this ministry that I ended up working with. And I called it symbolically a mountain that represented replacement theology. Theology. It was a mountain of theology. Theology, as a reminder, is by definition the study of God, but mostly it has become the study of what man thinks about God. Because it's not really the study of God, it's the study of what people have come up with to explain or describe God and his way of dealing with things. Because in that realm of theology is one that is called replacement theology or fulfillment theology, and it says, in short, that God is done with the Jews. The Old Testament kind of closed the story, closed the book on the Jewish people and on Israel, and we reboot it with the church and Christians. And this is where God's focus is today. It's a dispensation of the Gentiles, and the Jewish people are on the sidelines. Maybe some will say that God's going to take them off the bench sooner or later, but it's going to be after the church has finished her job and is raptured. So that's very much a nutshell. It's not detailed, but it is well accepted and thoroughly immersed in Christianity for 19 centuries. So in some ways, we're here to counter that because it's a limitation. It suffocates your spiritual life, and at best, it limits it. That's because God is not done. If he's done with the Jews, then it was a mistake that he called them in the first place. If he's done with Israel, then he really goofed. He should have chosen a different nation, a different place to settle and begin this story of redemption. But it's not. Everything in there is for a reason. Every person in there is for a reason to learn from either good or bad, or just the way that God responds to those who relate to him in different ways or refuse to relate to him. So it's a very interactive story. And here we see this intense setting where Jacob is on his way out from Laban. We went through this, and now he's crossing the Jabbok, which is a river, and it literally means crossing. And he had already sent his two groups of people across this river because he was told by some of the people that he sent out sort of to spy out if his brother Esau was anywhere to be found. They found him. He had 400 men from his home. It was like a troop. It was like soldiers and servants that worked for him. and they were heading his way, Jacob's way. So he sent out all these flocks, like multitude of flocks of every kind. He sent them across the brook or the river. And the reason was that he wanted to appease his brother. Why did he have to appease his brother? Because just before Jacob was leaving to go to his uncle Laban's house and town where he lived, this large farm, Esau mentioned in the hearing of Rebekah, their mother, that when I see him next, meaning Jacob, I'm going to kill him. So this is the last words that Jacob heard about or from his brother, and he was scared of him. And he had reason to be because he connived him. So he was just looking to see if there was some way he could appease them. So he sent these flocks. Now, you got to remember, these are lots of flocks. They didn't have currency so much. They did have things they'd barter with, you know, jewelry and, you know, precious things, clothing, etc., that they would barter with. But this is the most valuable with their flocks because they produced other flocks and they could be traded and they could be used for food, obviously. But he worked. He worked at Laban's property for 20 years. He labored, and he tells about this, you know, I did all this labor. I hurt, my hands hurt from the pain of working in the cold, etc., and day and night. And yet he was willing to take this entire flock of animals and put them in front of him, between him and Esau, and tell his servants to go ahead of him. And when Esau asks, what is this all about? Tell them, this is from your servant, Jacob, for you as a gift. That was a huge, generous experience for him, you know, this offering. But I don't think it was just because he was afraid. He definitely was afraid. He said he was afraid. But I don't think it was just that. I think that when God said, you are no longer Jacob, you are Israel, he literally had a moment that changed his identity. We would call it being born again, although it doesn't look the same as we would expect when somebody is born again. So it's not a model for what it means to be born again. You don't have to wrestle through the night, in other words, in the darkness. Your life doesn't have to be so despairing and full of fear in order to be at a place where you can be born again. But for Jacob, that's what was required of him, because he had to swap his identity, exchange his life for the life of the Messiah, Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. And when he did, his identity was not only changed, but renamed. And this is the key of this, because before he was a conniver and he strived against what was right, against God in a sense, and just plotted his own way and was self-absorbed. And God changed that. And this is the identity thing. He no longer walked the same. He touched his hip and he literally had a limp, which means that he never walked the same again. Now that, yes, it was a reality physically, but spiritually, your walk must change. The way you walk, the way you act, the way you talk to people, treat people, must change in order to bear the fruit worthy of repentance, which is what he did. So he sees his brother and he says, tell him your servant. So here he is. He had served under Laban. He was ruthless. But now he's putting himself in with the identity and the position of being his brother's servant. That is a pure picture of a willingness to put others before yourself. What did Jesus say when his disciples were arguing amongst themselves for position? He says, let me tell you guys, unless you make your servant of all, the least of these my brethren, you're not my servant. You're not my friend. You're not one of mine. So the mentality of a believer, of a follower of Yeshua, Jesus, is a servant attitude. It's humbling ourselves before the hand of God and gaining favor before God and man. And this is what happened to Jacob. It began, and he could risk giving up all that he had because he knew that God gave him all that he had, and he could certainly refresh him once again. And he was no kid. He was like probably 97 years old, which sounds like really super old. In those days, it was not super old, but it was not young by any means, because their mortality rate was shrinking consistently after the flood, so that it came to be the point when Moses showed up that he said man's days are 70 years, 80 years for good reasons of health. So he was not a kid, and he wasn't going to start new, but he was going to start fresh. And he was willing to do that because it wasn't just that his brother would kill him, but it was that his brother needed help. And so This takes us to why Jacob was in the height of this story in the first place. It's because of his loins. We're going to talk about this again, but remember what God said to Abraham the first time that they met. He told him to come out from your land into a place that I will show you. And Abraham followed. It was by faith. And then he gets to a place, Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3, and he speaks about what I'm going to do for you, Jacob, is not just about you. He said, I'm going to make you a blessing, and through you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. And those who bless you, I will bless, and those who curse you, I will curse. So you don't have anything to do with this, Abraham. I'm going to do all of this. And then he repeats the same thing to Isaac and to Jacob. And what is being passed down, it's not eternal life, it's a blessing. And the blessing is something that has to be uncovered as a believer, not just read it somewhere in a commentary or hear about it somewhere in a message, but explore, what does this blessing actually mean? Because it was eternal in nature. It wasn't temporary. So in order for it to pass down through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and keep going, God said to Jacob, and all your descendants too, I will make a blessing. And I will give you the land that you see started with Abraham. He says, look around you. Everything you see will be yours. And then he said, everywhere you put your feet will be yours. And then as time went on, he defined those borders, which are even large. It's Israel. It's Israel today. Those are the borders. But it's even larger. It goes beyond where Israel's borders are. So Israel is not in the mode of trying to gain more land, of trying to put other people underneath them. It's to live in peace with their neighbors where they live. And that's no easy thing when you're an Israeli. And for that matter, it's not an easy thing for the Jews. 19 centuries proves that out in this modern world we're living in. But it was even earlier than that. We're going to talk a lot about why is it that the Jews are so hated and what have been the most hated people on the earth for the longest period of time, the most sought out for the annihilation and destruction, and in the process, hostage. The Jews were taken hostage many times, or Israelis many times throughout the Old Testament, and God rescued them. So these are things that are important to know, because we are watching this. When we read the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, we are watching this. I mean, you have to see this in like a cinema here in the movie theater. This is cinematography. The Bible is alive, and we have to see it that way in order to grasp hold of its deepest meanings. So the thing about Jacob's identity, it's something we should be able to identify in our own experience. Because prior to that, he's a type in a sense. He's a real person, but he's a type of all humanity. Because, you know, the Bible says that in Noah's day, that the hearts of men, all people on earth were wicked continually. And that's why God had Noah, because he found favor in his sight, to go about building an ark for the salvation of man and for the animals. So in this process, the recognition that there's a big problem with mankind. And after Noah brings his family, three sons and their wives and his wife, that's all of humanity. Why? Because the men's hearts were wicked continually, and God was going to end that and reboot it. He did. And then he told them certain things when they landed. We'll talk about this sometime. And then the ways of life to instruct them. And also, he just let them be. You know, and people went their own ways, really. But we do follow the bloodline of Shem in the process. He's one of the three sons of Noah, who from Shem, a couple of generations following him, comes Abraham. So this lineage is also an extremely important part of the story. But not long after Noah, while you're reading, it's only a chapter or two, we come up with the Tower of Babel, because man was left to be themselves, and they come up with this idea that we can ascend to heaven. And God changed that for them. He didn't go around killing or massacring people, but he ended their attempts to build a tower to Babel, because he said amongst themselves, the Godhead, it's a strange conversation. He says, look, we got to take this down, because if we don't, there's no end to what they can do. So that's where the Tower of Babel collapsing was all about. But soon after that, Abraham shows up and God is starting humanity with this blessing so that they can live together in peace and prosperity. So the blessing has many aspects to it, but the most important one is that whoever is recipient of it, would become the kind of people, and this can only be divinely made, that's why Jesus later calls it born again, that they would accept this calling to not just be concerned with their own things and their own people and just be so self-absorbed that it's like the world orbits around you, but to be concerned with your neighbor's well-being. And that's where the blessing begins, into the families that are closest to you and in such a way that they would see the same thing. This is better. Abraham is a better neighbor than the neighbor on the other side. And the news about Abraham spread rapidly, and we'll talk about that. And he became such a blessing that he was desirable to have as a friend, as a neighbor, as a co-citizen in the lands they were living in. And then the same thing was for Isaac, and then Jacob, and then Jacob's descendants. Did it work well? No, it didn't, unfortunately, because they always had this opportunity to make decisions in the midst of some experiences that were somewhat disastrous. Some of those decisions did not go well. So all the sons did not act perfectly. I mean, some of you may say all your sons acted perfectly once you got saved. Mine didn't, and that's because I didn't. And so they didn't have a perfect model. So there was this aspect of imperfection that travel down parallel tracks with this life in the spirit of a believer. Now, of course, we're talking right now about Old Testament saints. So there's some different aspects of an Old Testament saint and a New Testament saint. The one thing that is the same in both is that we still need to make our own decisions. We still have to decide at any given moment, am I going to trust in the Lord and do good, or am I going to lean on my own understanding and do whatever I think is right? And this is always in front of us, that kind of a level of trust. When it doesn't go right, it leads to a dead end at best or destruction at worst. This is the condensation of history. And we want to make corrections. And this is why I believe you're listening, not because I'm a great speaker or storyteller, but because you want to be living right before God. In the sight of God, you want to be living right. You want to live a worshipful lifestyle. You want to be skilled in what you do. You want to be successful that you can help others. I believe that if you're listening to this, this is why God led you here. And, you know, put my teaching, good or bad, aside, but just ask God once we part shortly that you would see how different am I than I once was. Because Jacob's confrontation was, it changed the way he lived. And we'll see this as we go on. But he's a type of all believers. We journey out of a previous identity. That's why we call this journey from Jacob into a new identity. You know, we go from life unto death, from darkness into light. It's God's family tree. And it's the greatest evidence of God's trustworthiness. First of all, in the natural, because God told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you would always be a people. And they're still a people. And this is centuries later from Genesis to where we are today. But his family tree, Jacob's, is evidence of God's trustworthiness. And it should energize us to trust God as well. His new name, though, is the most controversial one in history. Because his name that's named the most in it, his name is, we'll still see in the Bible that he's called the God of Jacob, that God of Jacob shows up. But because Jacob's is symbolic of an unredeemed descendant of Isaac, which makes him a Jew, Israel is the name of a redeemed, the God of Israel, if you're beneath the God of Israel, is the name for a redeemed Israelite. But it's also, in the generic sense, the God of Israel is the descendants of Jacob in the natural. So that sounds confusing, but the descendants of Jacob are the Jewish people. The land of Israel is the same land. The God of Israel is the God of land and people, and it cannot be changed, shifted, prayed away, thought away. I'll leave you with one last thought, because that's not common teaching. There's a separation that many of you have grown up with in the church, that God has something for the Jews maybe later on, but not right now. This is a New Testament era. That is not true. It's not just a misuse of the scriptures, it's an abuse of the scriptures. Just think about this one thing. If any of you have been to a wedding in a Christian setting, or even just a Protestant setting, you will get to a point where the pastor will say, you know, if anyone has to anything to say, say it now. For what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. Does that sound familiar? That means if God's brought them together, don't even kid around. Don't try to separate it. But the truth is that God put Israel as a people together with Israel as a land, and he calls them both Israel. To try to say that the people are not the real Jews, the church is the true Jew, and Israel is not the same land that it was in the biblical days, it's just symbolic of it. It's just any old nation. You've separated what God has joined together, and it's not healthy. So keep going. This journey is going to take us brighter and brighter into this brightness that shines at midday, because it is a good and healthy story. Shalom, shalom.
We bless you for taking the time to consider this message. May it cause you to be fruitful and effective and lead others along the way with confidence and determination. Check out our website at comfortmypeople.com to become better informed and equipped to restore righteousness to the people of Israel, America, and beyond. Please consider sharing this and visit us on social media. Shalom and blessings.